Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news. It's Monday, and Edwin is with me once again. Hey, Edwin, how are you doing?
Martin, hold on to your toupee, my friend. The party has only just started, and it's only just cranking up.
I know. We said six months ago, we said, here's a playbook. Pretty much every box has been ticked. But one of the ones that haven't been ticked until this point is, let's just throw out some more largesse to first-time buyers. And, you know, just like in China, let them buy with friends, families, cats, you name it, they can use it.
Well, look, that's pretty much on the next on the agenda. I mean, prediction number 9 is certainly playing out, as we called it back then, right? So, the next level is those little friends of ours, those little bastards that are making more money than you and I put together on social media. We called it. It's on. It's happening. But can the world get any crazier is the question. And why now? Yeah. Why now? Isn't the immigration lever enough, Martin? Why now? This is mind-boggling at the moment.
Well, of course, people were twitchy about property prices, and the latest from CoreLogic showed a very slight movement up. So, of course, the whole media pack said, hey, property prices are rising, you know, we're through the worst, et cetera, et cetera. Despite the fact we've still got the mortgage cliff, despite the fact we've probably got higher interest rates ahead. But you're right. The really interesting question is, having opened the gates on 400,000 migrants or whatever the number is, you know, including those from India and all over the place, No, we've got to do more. We've got to actually save those property prices. We've got to save all of those investment properties that we've got, says politicians. So what do? They basically entice even more people to come in and come and buy with a friend or buy with a pet. I don't know, you know.
Dusty and Evan, they're getting paperwork together. They're they've got an appointment with the mortgage broker for Mortgage Choice next week. I'm just going to put it out there. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit more about it later on, but all the stuff and all the shenanigans that's going to go on. But it seems to me, Martin, that what the government is actually saying, right, is we're going to give you pretend money, yep, right, by way of you don't have to pay stamp duty, you don't have to, you can amalgamate your first home buyer's grant. So we're basically going to give you pretend money that you can't use anywhere else other than to give to a property seller, property developer, property spruiker, and inflate those prices so they can get that pretend money in real book value in the bank to inflate the prices of properties that we're trying to get you to go in because you're complaining they're too high anyway. I mean, it just doesn't make sense, does it?
Well, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense from a societal perspective. But if you are actually thinking about the number of building firms falling over at the moment and the heavy lobbying from the construction industry for more help from the government, then maybe it does. And of course, the old banks, you know, the poor old banks, they're lending has really eased back. So the latest statistics show that the lending growth is easing back. So, you know, those banks need a helping hand as well. So basically what you can do is you can get more people to take more of that pretend money and then go to the bank, and the bank will then lend you some more pretend money on the back of the pretend money that they gave you so that the banks can actually grow their business. The construction sector say, whoopee, we'll go and build some more properties. And it's a perfect circle, except, of course, that people are caught in the crossfire. And this is going to put huge, huge additional pressure on many households. And interestingly, the sentiment, we'd expect that to see that turning now where people think, oh, fear of missing out. You know, I miss out on this deal. And we're already seeing some of that in Sydney in some areas, not universally. And I get very frustrated, Edwin, with this story about property prices are now rising. No. Property prices are not rising universally, right? There are a few areas where there have been some movement up, but there are still other areas where property prices are still going south. And I still see in my data all of these people who've got these massive mortgages and no ability to handle them as rates rise and the mortgage cliff. It's like everybody's singing the tune without listening to what's going on outside. So they've got fingers in their ears and just saying, well, let's just throw more. Let's go and throw more and pretend money at this and save the banks and save the construction sector. This is nothing actually about helping real people to get into the property market, in my view.
No, and we'll bring some of those points up later on as well when we talk about the numbers and what we're seeing on the ground with the chatter that we're fielding from different agents around Sydney, which is rather interesting. But you know, with all this, Martin, with all this, there's all this money going out, right? The government's throwing all this money, wanting to pretend money left, right, and centre. But you know, and we're building stadiums. Right, that's a good thing. I didn't say it was a bad thing for your footballers and everybody else out there that likes to chase a pig bladder or a little white ball around the place. But we're gonna strip the funding on some infrastructure spend. It just doesn't make any sense.
Does it? No, we look at Tasmania, right? So they've announced basically another stadium there. At the time when housing affordability in Tasmania has gone through the floor, and where in fact, you know, social housing is probably worse in that Tassie than almost anywhere else. I mean, it's so myopic, it's so unbelievable, and yet that's what people are actually placing their bets on. It's disgusting.
Yeah, but look, they are getting some things. Well, the politicians, I think, you know, sort of trying to make the right moves, trying to make the right. Facilitate the right people to come around to come on, and now you've got the opposition calling for calls for the government to consider allowing foreigners into the defence force. Well, you know, before you say anything, Martin, before you start pulling this thing down, I reckon it's good because for a couple of reasons. The first and foremost is that, you know, army personnel, they are used to sleeping in tents, right? So that's a first. The second, we're going to need more army personnel to guard Coles, Woolies, Aldi, Costco from all the shit storm that's going to hit when people can't afford to buy food and they're going to raid these stores. I mean, that's my two bobs worth. So sort of, you know, you could say it's a call in the right direction, maybe.
Well, that's crazy. It is crazy. And look, this whole idea of... tent cities and things. I mean, this is actually a reality for some people now. Again, in Tasmania, for example, you know, there are stories there of people living in tents and they've got no choice but to do that. You know, the whole housing edifice has got to the point of absolute stupidity. And yet, they just pull more levers and nothing is off limits, right? Hey, why don't we just bring in a few more developers? You know, get them to extend it even more.
Yeah. Well, this is where people need to pay a little bit more closer attention to what you and I have to say and what the witch chatter has been telling us over the years. And if you recall, in 2019, middle of 2019 to the last quarter of 2019, you and I spoke about what the witch chatterers were telling us that were involved with the immigration firms, the large immigration firms in Sydney. Predominantly in Sydney, they told us that, and we were breaking the news as to how the criteria was pretty much diluted in order to create quicker pathways to permanent residency and citizenship. In last year, we talked about how the education department were also, you know, anybody that was obtaining a visa. Under an education passport, let's say, the pathway to stay here longer was doubled to work and then later obtain a permanent residency. Yeah, with all this, all these things that the Ouija chatter has been telling us, local and foreign, have really played a big part. in the main body. We've seen those discussions, or we've seen those topics play a big role in the property landscape. And look, one thing for sure is I'm glad that our followers, I get DMs, you get DMs. I know you get a lot more than what I do with Rick from our followers telling us how they've taken that advice, and they've taken that the things that we've shared and have put it to practice, particularly around what the WeChat chatterers have been saying, which is a good thing. And hopefully they keep their ears to the ground, or to the smartphone or smart device, and continue to watch us. With regards to what they're saying now, Martin, this is now, I've got to be very, very careful how I say this, because these are from people, these are WeChat chatterers that are very, very strongly, highly networked with government officials, both here and over in mainland China. And if people, when you start talking about all these things, what the government's doing or not doing, local developers falling over and local building companies going under. Well, guess what, Martin? The governments have put a solution together to basically fly in developers, and like we shared last week, flying in plane loads of workers to directly work in these development projects. Specific projects for specific tasks. But as I've been sharing with some of the people during the week and on the weekend, is nothing's going to stop the people that they're flying in their plane loads after they finish the contract. Where they're a couple of years, 2 years, or 3 years, whatever. From then afterwards, just basically disappearing into the greater population and becoming the ghost migrants that you and I talk about, and becoming long-term little brothers and little sisters, providing the government doesn't hand out PR visas afterwards anyway. So all this is happening, and if a lot of people, and you've also got to look at, we're talking about what's happening and the impact that that the policy changes around property and stamp duty policies and that over in Singapore, what that means to a lot of the Chinese investors there and the bigwigs there and people with a lot of money there, where basically they've said on the weekend, they told us that there's two destinations that those big players that would otherwise have parked the money there are going to go. And Australia is one of them, Canada is the other. So that's where, basically, in a way, it's like saying the local government saying, well, you know what, you can sink or swim to the local builders and developers, because we've got plan B. And plan B is just an air flight away. And a lot of the money apparently is already being picked up in a lot of the banking institutions here in preparation for big projects. But whether or not those big projects start today or tomorrow, Martin, as you and I say, and I've been saying for a while, is it's going to take 3 to 5 years to play catch up to anything of significance with regards to investment properties. But it's going to create a bit more of a frenzy, and in a way, I guess it's going to try to replenish the state government coffers and the federal government budgets as well with regards to foreign investment, you could say, and also with local stamp duties. I mean, it's almost like we said last week, who really is in control, Matt?
Well, it's a good question, Edwin, and I think you have to look at that sort of agenda that you've just highlighted. You know, the state governments have significant issues. This is another lever that they've been able to pull, with the feds, in terms of trying to stop the whole thing, if you like, collapsing. The point I think I want to make, and I'll come back to the announcement we mentioned a bit before, right? Because this is, again, you got to see it in this context, right? You need more cannon fodder to buy more property to be able to make this all work. Right. And because of the fact that housing affordability is shot to pieces, and because of the fact that the interest rate buffers and things are actually, pretty adverse at the moment, many people can't afford to buy without more help. So this is part of the scene, right? Because whilst you can bring more developers in and get them to build stuff, if there's nobody actually wanting to buy it at the end of the chain, it's not going to work. So you've got to see it in that context. And so that's why we've got this announcement of, extend extensions to the first home buyer scheme and the you can buy it with a friend, et cetera, et cetera. Precisely as we said 6 months ago. But none of this is addressing the fundamentals. All of this is just putting more veneer over a really smelly problem, which is structurally very difficult for Australia. But nobody wants to tackle the real true thing to deal with, right? What they're doing is just putting more stuff over the top. So it's a bit like some of these new high-rise developments, right? So you just smear a bit of cement over the top and put some tiling down there. It looks superficially lovely until 6 months later when the cracks start to appear and the whole thing falls apart. I mean, this is the analogy that I think we have to come to, that there nobody wants to tackle the full deep structural issues that are actually here in the housing sector. They just want to skirt around the edge and get through to the next election.
Oh, look, exactly. And this is the whole travesty. This is the whole thing. But you know what, Martin? It's we keep on voting these bastards in over and over again. We could go into politics, we could get sidetracked, but at the end of the day, it's these policies, that ad hoc policies that are spring up here and there, thinking they're going to basically plug the dam that's about to bust. Mm-hmm. And in some parts, it is busting. In others that seem to be holding together, and somewhat the mainstream media are beating the chest over those. Those areas, look at what's happening over here. Look at all the excitement over here. Oh no, don't look over there. It's too hard. Don't look over there. There's too much of the real world happening over there. When you've got single parents, young families, middle aged, the elderly, basically. I put a post on Twitter with regards to I went to speak with a potential client that has a small market like an IGA, but it's an independent. It's a little bit bigger than an IGA, mainly a fruit or a type of style, a fruit shop type style grocer, and he's got three shops, but he also wholesales. He also picks up a lot for and sells wholesale to other smaller shops, and the shoplifting that's happening or has been happening over the last 2 to 3 months. He was telling me that him and his wife were telling me that they've had an increase of about 200% of shoplifting over their stores, and also the similar scenarios in the other stores that they don't own but they supply goods to. And the lady was almost in tears, not because of that, but because she was saying that she's now seeing the elderly that have been frequenting her store that she mainly operates from, she works at, and they're buying anywhere between 30 and 50% less goods each week because they can't afford too much. They can't afford to buy anymore. And this one, keep on, and this thing's going to get worse, and the politicians don't see this, but yet they want to build more stadiums. They want to attend more royal weddings and royal events and be rubbing shoulders with the haves, and potentially the have-nots can go to hell. I mean, this is crazy. This is third world country stuff.
Well, it is, and it's just worth underscoring. You know, the new changes to the scheme are pretty remarkable, right? So they're expanding the eligibility of the three schemes. So siblings, two friends and a parent or a child can jointly apply for the three schemes from July 1. So, you know, all come welcome. They'll also be, and this is interesting, that available to people, home buyers who haven't owned a property in the last decade. So it means that people who actually maybe are older and who've been renting for a period of time can also now be eligible. And of course, they've opened the gate also to Australian permanent residents will be eligible for the three schemes too. So come one, come all. Right? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's right. You got to get it. They want to get a hold of the savings and the monies that are basically that people have put together in other asset classes, right? Yeah. No different to what they're doing. No different to what they're doing in China. But going back to the program, going back to the one where the program will also be available for home buyers who haven't owned a property in the last decade. So my reading of that is that you may have bought something in the past, right? And you sold and you've been renting for the last 10 years, and now you can jump back in, right? And avail yourself of the grants, right? That's my reading of it. Mm. That's one side of it. So theoretically, you could also say that by buying a property under a trust or under family trust, like many of us do, your name doesn't appear on it. So theoretically, you didn't comply with the regulations around first home buying purchasing, because you're already based, you already have a home, albeit it's not in your name. But now you can, Martin. This is the thing. So basically, what it is you're going to have more property flippers, and this is what I said when the Perrottet dished out the stamp duty land tax option, the grant that they gave at the end of last year. And I said, that's going to bring in flippers into the market, because I'll buy them cheap, they'll do them up, and they'll sell them at a much higher with a good return for the first home buyers, because the prices are going to be inflated, and they'll still get a good drink for the first home buyers, because again, that option was available up to the 1.5. So you saw properties that were generally selling for around 1.15 to now, pretty much reaching the 1.4s and 1.5s because of the Perrottet effect. So again, it's the same snowball effect with these scenarios. I mean, just reading it once, and I was thinking, oh yeah, I could just see all my friends, relatives, and acquaintances that have got properties under trust and family trust, and saying, "Hey, I fit into that mold now. Yes. I want a first home buyer's grant as well now. And by the way, I can buy something up to 1.5 as well."
No, that's crazy. Exactly. Oh no, that is a very important observation, Edwin, because it does actually open the door for a whole new tranche of people who are already in the property market, but not, as you say, in their own name. So again, you've got to understand that this is actually a deliberate strategy, and it's all about just trying to prop this edifice up for a bit longer, yeah, right?
Yeah, and the other group that are absolutely cheering for this. Mm. There is another group that are absolutely there. I believe they're holding parties in the streets. In the city, and that's the law firms.
Yep.
The litigation that's going to take place 6, 12, 18 months post somebody buying with another sibling, or buying with a friend or a girlfriend or a boyfriend. I mean, the litigation is going to be absolutely phenomenal. But you know what? They get paid at the end. And it's, again, these people, the young people, the ignorant, that are going to get just chewed up and spat out. But it's crazy. But they haven't thought of it, Martin. But look, one of the positives, though, out of all this is we can be assured is that we knew that our boy Don Perrottet was watching our show and watches our show prolifically. But now we also know that Albo and co watch our show, because otherwise they wouldn't have come up with this profile.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's my call, and I'm sticking to it. Okay.
They heard it here first. Well, just talking about the edifice crumbling, the second article that we should talk about is the another example of a failed construction, right? And this is actually up in Newcastle this time. It just keeps happening, Edwin. So the whole question of the quality of construction, particularly high-rise construction, is now absolutely in question again. And we just see more examples of, failure.
Well, yeah, look, this is a story in the making, right? Mm. There was a story published March 11th, I think it is, but it just skimmed the on the surface. And actually, my son sent me this document, and he said, "Dad, have a look at this thing." And I started reading it, and we'll put the pages up on the screen so our viewers can read it, and I've highlighted some of the areas. But this is really the Opal Tower 2.0, in the making.
Yep.
Talking to builders and talking to engineers. And as I flicked them through this document as well, and they were absolutely flabbergasted. One of them's actually Bob the Builder, our mate Bob the Builder, that I refer to from time to time. He's actually going to Newcastle next week, and he's going to go and take some snaps for us of the actual construction, because it's not finished. They believe that it'll finish by the end of the last quarter of this year. But this isn't just something small, Martin. There are apartments being sold in this complex for $2.45 million for a single apartment, and obviously they're on the top three floors, and this is three levels that they lobbied the local government to give them an extra three levels of apartments, on top of the structure. I mean, this thing's going to be a nightmare from when if they obtain occupation certificate. Because it's under a lot of scrutiny at the moment. I mean, this is just a disaster in the making. And when you're talking about, it's not small change. You're talking $2.4 million for sub penthouse apartments. That isn't that's not even the penthouse. That's just the sub penthouse apartments. But the interesting thing is that some of the engineers that I've been talking to and builders, they're saying they've broken the water tap. And this thing's just going to be riddled with issues moving forward. I mean, they've got at the moment the building site contains large hydraulic struts supporting the walls of the excavation. I mean, this is a mammoth task to stop this water penetrating through the sides because they've broken the water table, and this thing, and I said to them, well, what happens when these hydraulic struts get taken away? And said, well, they've got to have one big ass wall supporting it. They're talking about the piles, which is they're basically to retain the surrounding land around them. They're asking themselves, did they get put in properly? Was the steel put in after the concrete was poured? I mean, because this is what was happening to a lot of the buildings there in Newcastle, where there was a building company where I won't mention, where they just couldn't. They decided to put the steel, in the piles before, after the concrete was poured, and in some cases they knew, like, some of those piles, let's call them retaining walls, it's got steel only three quarters of the way down because I couldn't push them down hard enough after the event. So it's only a matter of time. It's a ticking time bomb, and it's a watch this space, and we'll be calling this as we continue with our podcast, because it is going to be an interesting project to keep an eye out, and the mainstream media haven't really picked up on the main issues here. It's just a wait and see, Martin.
But I think it's very important, Erwin, and you and I have been talking for quite some time, number of years actually, about the poor quality of construction, the poor quality of supervision, and the pressure on construction at the moment, particularly from high cost of materials, high cost of labour. So there is definitely evidence of corners being cut in some areas. And you have to ask the question as to whether some of these high-rise buildings will still be around in some years' time, or whether, in fact, that we will go through a whole phase of demolition.
Yeah. So what I'm told from this one, and this is, like I said, I'm really going to keep an eye out on this one moving forward, is because this is only about 400 to 500 meters from the shoreline, from the water's edge, right? So it's not that far, really, when you think about it. Secondly, you've got Don't forget all the subterranean mine shafts that are all over Newcastle, right? So you've got that. A lot of people don't know, and you know they don't realize that there was an earthquake in the not too distant past that absolutely rattled Newcastle, and there was only the really old buildings that didn't have basement parking areas were the ones that basically stood the test of that little shake, rattle and roll. So you've got these potential issues moving forward. The other thing that I'm going to be really eager to see if anybody brings it up moving forward is how the developer was able to obtain the extra three levels. This is, again, this is why I call this, not only because it's going to sink like Opal Tower, but also, if you recall, Opal Tower, the developers there were able to gain an extra four levels above the original development proposal that they submitted. And when you start looking back at the history of that, theoretically, you got to ask yourself, did they do all the engineering works, all the base, all the stuff that we don't see with our eyes? Was that enough to sustain and to take on the extra four levels of mass? And in this case, an extra three levels, and albeit now that they've even broken the water table.
Yep, it's great questions. Well, we'll keep a watching brief on this. And, I know a number of other developments across the country where, in fact, the high-rise construction quality is definitely deficient. And it takes some time sometimes for these issues to come to surface, right? So, once people have moved in and, a couple of years later, suddenly cracks start appearing and et cetera, et cetera. But the other question with this one and with others is, will they get the occupation certificate, right? Because the chances are some of those will never be occupied.
No. And this is, there's one that one of our followers was telling me that it's totally empty in Pendle Hill. Shout out to our follower there at Pendle Hill. Sat with him on the weekend, and he was telling the building across where he lives there in Pendle Hill, it's totally vacant and has been for a while, for over a year apparently. And I said that they don't have the occupation certificate. And this is how, it's a step in the right direction, but obviously it's something, if it was built properly in the first place, there's another 50, 60 apartments that could have been occupied.
Yeah, good point. Let's move on to talk about numbers because, listings continue to slide a little, don't they? If you look at Sydney, for example, 15,851 this week compared with 16,069 last. I mean, not a huge move, but it does seem to me that the houses are still hanging around a bit. Apartments, a little bit of a rise.
Yeah, look, it's that again. With the apartments, it's they were climbing, but now they're sort of. It's a bit of a mixed chatter out there with to the apartment holders. The ones that, are coming to the end of the fixed term leases. Obviously, they're the ones that they're going to that are owned by a lot of the WeChat chatterers. We know what they're going to do. We've been talking about it for a very long time now. They're just going to be converted into room lettings or hot bedding, as we call it, and they're going to basically be able to keep them and make a little bit of extra money on the to pay down the mortgages. So that hence the reason why we're not seeing a lot of growth in the placement of new apartments on the market. Look, we are now starting to get into the colder weeks of the season, so it is expected that the numbers are going to remain low and possibly even pull back a bit, potentially a bit more. What is swelling up is the demand. It doesn't take it's not you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure out why. But there is a greater demand. With one of the things that we've got to be careful, and this is what we're talking earlier on, Martin, is our chatter, our conversations with agents around Sydney. It's interesting that in some parts of the Blacktown LGA, listing numbers have absolutely tanked, where you've got one particular office that caught my attention, one of the guys that I was talking to there. They've got an office of six salespeople and four associates, and they've only got three listings on their books. And I said, well, I would have expected some of the investors that would have been feeling or the pressure of the rate rises. Said, look, initially they did, but then as obviously tenancies changed, that blow was softened to the point now where they are meeting the rents, meeting the repayment. So we're not seeing a lot of investor homes come on the market, and obviously people, owner occupiers, they're not prepared to sell unless they get get their ideal price. So it's a bit of a stalemate there. It's a bit of a situation where it's not really supportive of the real estate agents' offices, because they're not turning over property, and they're going to be in a lot of strife. They've entered those grounds earlier in the year. Then you've got other places. One in particular that caught my attention was Strathfield, agents in Strathfield that I've been talking to. And these agents in Strathfield, Martin, are getting swamped with people that bought your $3 million to $4 million properties in the last two and a half years. And now they're talking about putting them back on the market, and possibly even walking away with as long as they walk away with a clean slate, they're very keen on putting the properties on the market. So it's, there are different worlds. These are just two sellers. We won't go into detail with a lot of others, but this is just what's happening there. And this is what you were talking about earlier on, is how more so than ever, we need to be really focused, and you need to be really focused as to what's happening in your particular area, your suburb, your backyard, your patch, in order to try and understand what's going to happen, because not all the areas are acting the same as what the mainstream media are telling in the main saying that is happening. It's all over, and you just got to be careful where you buy, what you buy, and also how you buy.
Absolutely. Well, some regional areas are looking very sick at the minute, and I'm still seeing further falls there. So closer into Sydney and Melbourne, there's a little bit of variation, but more than ever you have to go local, I think. Interestingly, property numbers in Melbourne pretty similar for last week. It was 24,710 this week, compared with 24,858 last. So little change, but again, it looks to me as though the apartments are a bit wobbly.
Yeah, that's just one thing. Now that the holiday season's over, and the holidays are over, and we're starting to come back into, we're going to see what's going to happen with the sales by underquoting, and with those numbers there, we'll see whether they really crank up, and that's going to tell us how confident the sellers really are, and how strong the conversations that the selling agents are believed or not believed with their potential vendors, and we'll see how those numbers, if those numbers get to closer to the 1,000. But at the moment, we're just still lower than last year. So in my view, the sellers still not as confident that they are really achieving the numbers overall, that is. Some areas are just going through the roof, but I think in most areas they're not achieving the numbers that the vendors would like to get, in order to then obviously go back into, like you and I have been talking about, the retirement villages and or downsizing to and staying in the local areas, because there's just nothing on the market. There's not a lot. I don't think there'll be a lot of a lot of sales activity, which is going to be interesting because that's going to put obviously a lot more pressure on the actual industry itself, because transactions are going to dwindle away. So that's, and regardless of the, you know, the fact that there's a lot of demand, all it's going to mean until we get to spring is that there's going to be a lot of people potentially having punch-ups at auctions in certain areas, Mark. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And the auction stats, you know, wobbling around similar numbers, a little bit up, a little bit down. But, you know, the activity level is going to remain quite low for a little while. It'll be very interesting to see what happens by the time we get to September, October, when the, you know, the spring surge comes through. By that time, a lot of the mortgage cliff will be through. We'll be having a bit of a read on where interest rates will be at that point. So it will be a fascinating next season, I think, but it's going to be quiet for the next few months. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on a lot more agents. Again, some of my data is showing me that a lot of agents are running around their head as chickens, but aren't able to prosecute sales.
And watch the stories in the next over the next 6 to 8 weeks potentially of real estate offices going bust or playing around fiddling around with trust accounts. I mean, this is when it all happens, when the pressure's on. Then people do all sorts of things. The only thing that separates the licensee in charge from the trust account is a password, right? And you know who holds that password, don't you?
Yeah, so perhaps the person who might be able to benefit. Yeah, spot on. And the other interesting observation is, and I don't know whether you're seeing it, but I certainly see it in some of my statistics, a lot of businesses are running off credit cards at the moment.
2019, deja vu. Yep. 2019, Martin.
Yep.
This is where we're at. So either the printer starts printing a lot more money and we go into some sort of a shutdown, but I don't believe that that's going to happen. Who knows? But I don't put that on the table. But we're slowly walking back into where the industry was in 2019. No doubt, a lot of other businesses as well that are you and I see from the beginning of this year. 2023 is the year of the hustle. Because a lot of businesses, a lot of industries, we're going to shrink and potentially shrink that much that they'll potentially disappear. There's a lot of crazy things happening out there. And you feel the pressure, you sense the pressure, and you see the anxiety that people are carrying, and the burden that they're carrying on their shoulders, even as you walk around in certain parts of Sydney where we obviously drive around here, there and everywhere, and you see it in people's eyes, you see it in their demeanor, you see coffee shops that would otherwise be three quarters full, or worst case scenario half empty, but now you only see a few tables filled up, people twiddling their thumbs. The food that you get is tastes a bit stale. If it's not stale, the portions are a lot smaller. And people will start acting out, and hopefully we're not going to get as bad as the shit is over in America and other parts of the world. Who knows? Who knows? What's around the corner for us as well?
I agree. And just touching on Sydney rentals, it's worth saying that there's around 10,230 properties for rent listed on Domain at the moment, which is roughly similar to where we were. So there is still property around. But of course, the supply and demand disequilibrium remains in the rental sector. And again, I've been talking to a couple of people who are in the sort of the first-time buyer mode, thinking, well, you know, my rents are going through the roof. Maybe it is worth coming in and buying now on the principle that, well, you know, I can control my costs if I actually buy somewhere. More than I can if I continue to rent, because the chances are that they're going to continue to put the rents up over the next little while. So there is a real contention, I think, between those who are renting and those who are thinking maybe of coming back in. So maybe what we'll see is 1 July, we'll see a bit of a spike because, of course, as we said at the start of the show, that's where some of these new rules come in and more people potentially can access first-time buyer grants and things. But I'm not sure there's enough there to support the demand for renting property in Sydney and Melbourne in particular, but elsewhere across the country too. Interesting, though, in some of the regional areas, I am seeing a different dynamic where there is actually more property coming on for rent and there is more availability. And in fact, in some of those areas, rents are not rising.
No, and this is what I was just about to say as well. This is because let's not forget that the tide is moving towards the CBDs now, right?
Yeah.
The main cities.
Yep.
For multiple reasons. But with the cost of living, with the rental increases, with the energy prices going skyrocketing and everything else going up, the only thing that's really in a way that's trying to put a stop from people going back towards the regions and for the tide to go back towards the regions of Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane as well, I'd imagine, is the simple fact that there's a lot more pressure from big corporations. And I think one of the banking CEOs over the weekend was saying that he wants all his executives front and center in the office, otherwise they can basically look for another job. So there's a lot of pressure from the bigger corporations, the bigger institutions to calling the workers back to work from the office because otherwise the cities are just going to be ghost towns like some of the ones that we see in China, right? Where there's nobody moving around and it's dying. It's not really then we no longer become a tourist center because it's, who wants to go to visit a ghost town, albeit we've got the Opera House and the Harbour Bridge and some other things here and there. But at the end of the day, if there's nobody around, if there's no real, if there's no life, we lose that flavor and tourists will go elsewhere. So all these things are playing out. But I think the pressure is going to be that great the locals, not the newcomers, not the new PR holders, but the locals are going to bite the bullet. And I dare say they're going to start moving back into the region. Maybe not as far as what a lot of people went during the pandemic, during the lockdowns and so forth. But I think, even as far as Lithgow over the mountains and probably Wyoming, northways, people are going to start venturing back that way, and it's going to that tide moving back is going to once again bring those rental prices back up a bit, but not as far as what we saw in the last 2 years.
No, I think that's right. I think some of the regional areas are going to be going sideways or down for quite some time. Well, just as we come to the end of the show, tip of the week, very important thought here, right? Anything mechanical around the house, ...
Yeah, look, anything mechanical, anything that you have mechanical around the house, whether it be pumps, lawnmowers, whatever, get them done. Obviously, it's a property show. Try to keep it to property and look, get your car serviced. As well, have it serviced, have it looked after, because I've been talking this week. The reason why I bring this up is because this week I've been talking to a lot of mechanics. All of a sudden, a lot of mechanics that have, I've been in touch with from referrals and friends and myself as well, dealing with our vehicles, and it's hard to get parts. It's hard to get things. That is a dying trade. And so if you've got more of your older equipment around the house, get it serviced ASAP, do something with it before things only get worse. Otherwise, you're going to be looking to buy new. A lot of the battery stuff isn't really lasting. It isn't as robust as what a lot of people would like to think it is. And it's really, from what I've been told, I don't have any battery stuff around the house in terms of mechanical machinery, but it doesn't cope well with the type of landscape that we have. So yeah, so if you've got any mechanical gear around the house, from Dusty's ride-on mowers to a push mower, get it serviced.
No, good advice. And one of the things I always say to people, in the cooler weather, it's a very good time to get the air conditioning units serviced, right? Because, of course, everybody leaves it until it gets really hot, and then you have to have a long wait. And again, from my contacts, replacement parts for some of the air conditioning units were almost impossible to get. So it is worth, thinking ahead and checking and planning. The other point I'd make, Edwin, burglar alarms. Make sure your burglar alarms are actually working effectively. Unfortunately, there is a significant spike in crime at the moment in a number of areas. And so the use of burglar alarms that are actually effective and working are pretty important. Many people, again, set and forget that. And the final thing I'd want to make is, the old the smoke detectors?
Yes.
One of those things that people forget is that the smoke detectors do need to have those batteries replaced on a regular basis. And, if you don't have a regular pattern of replacement, you can get yourself caught out then as well. And particularly if you ignore the little bleeps, it sort of says, oh, my battery's going down, eventually it stops. So it is very important to do some of those basic maintenance tasks and just keep on top of it. Don't just set and forget, because unfortunately there's a little bit of activity required just to keep things in top condition.
Yeah, and technicians aren't, as I said, they're not readily available, and mechanics aren't readily available. It's really hard to get these bloody cars serviced. It's just taking ages, and then mechanics awry and this and that and the other. So that's why I thought, that would be the tip. But what about your tip, Mud, for tomorrow? What's going to happen tomorrow? Are we going up? Are we going down? Are we going to stay the same? Are we going backwards? What's happening? Dusty says it's no go. Dusty says it's going to sit as is. And Evan's of the opinion we're going to go up 25 points.
Well, so if you look at the data, particularly the sticky inflation data, they should put the interest rate up again. So the interest rates are not high enough to tackle the inflationary pressures in Australia at the moment. And in fact, there was, I think it was on last night on the TV, an economist saying they should be putting rates up significantly higher if they really want to tackle inflation. And of course, that's true. But I am of the view that it's going to be a line ball decision. I have a nasty suspicion that the RBA might say, oh, we'll just wait for some more information to see what's going on. But, we actually should be seeing rates a little higher. The inflationary pressures are really sticky, and particularly in the services sector, food costs continuing to rise dramatically. A lot of businesses still putting up their prices more than they need to. Probably there's a real sleeping problem, and then of course you've also got the energy costs, which are going to go higher ahead as well. So we've had a bit of relief for the oil price coming down, but other energy costs are going to go higher too. So the inflationary outlook is still very aggressive in my view. They should lift. Whether they will, of course, goes back to how independent they are. And of course, the RBA review that we had the other day made the point that, maybe the RBA should be even more independent. But at the moment, of course, the RBA is worrying about protecting financial stability, housing prices, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not sure how objective they really are going to be. My feeling is that it will be a line ball decision, but what they should do is put rates higher.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think either way, we're going to get a lot of chatter one way or another, or blood on the streets.
Well, that's right. And if in fact rates don't go up, then that'll be the next bit of celebration from the property spruikers, right? So CoreLogic says property prices are moving up higher. The RBA doesn't move on the rates again. So it's 2 months in a row. You can hear the chatter now emerging. And then of course they will refer back to those earlier announcements that we made at the top of the show, right? That the government's very keen to get more people to buy in. You can smell the change in sentiment, And of course, a lot of the bank economists have now started to get more bullish. So, you know, Westpac saying, oh, maybe the worst is over, et cetera, et cetera. CBA has pretty much come out and said the same as well. So, you know, it's amazing how the atmospherics have changed, but the fundamentals haven't changed, right? And we've still got this mortgage cliff, and we've still got higher interest rates than we've had for a long time. Mortgage stress is still all over the place, continuing to rise, as we saw from Roy Morgan over the last few days. My data will be out next week as well, and that's showing the same thing. So, yeah, it's a matter of smoke and mirrors, Edwin, smoke and mirrors. But smoke and mirrors go an awful long way to keep property prices buoyant, don't they?
Yeah, man, this is, Nick, obviously what you and I have been talking about for a long time. Before the mainstream even started picking up on property economists started talking about, and the importance of keeping an eye on the numbers, you know, outside of just the normal. I mean, numbers, I don't think numbers, looking at sales numbers on market and transactions formed a big part of how people were looking at the property economics pre 2020. Post 2020, post 2019, different ball game, different altogether, and there's a lot more. There are a lot more people wanting to drive this ship than what you and I know, and but ultimately we don't really know who's in control. I don't think our local governments are in control either. But hey, that's a story for. You, me, and Uppercut Adams, perhaps.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, great to catch up, and thanks very much for spending an hour or so with me. We'll do the same again next week. More things, of course, to talk about then. Look forward to that, and have a good week. Meantime, of course, though, next weekend, it's in the UK. Well, there's meant to be a king being crowned, but I'll tell you what, not that many people seem that enthused about it. So watch this space.
Watch this space. All the best, Martin. You take care.
See ya. Take care. Bye.